Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, NFL football fans. Welcome to another edition of Pure NFL. I'm your host, the NFL exporter himself, Lance Goodman, and I'd like to welcome everyone to the new year, 2016. We're down to the very final game of the 2015/16 NFL regular season, and I'm happy that you all could join me today. I've got Kevin Bowen, Mike Leinert, and James Morris all joining me today to talk some pure NFL with you about your favorite NFL football teams. And let's get things started. We're going to bring in Kevin Bowen of the Indianapolis Colts and talk some Colts football. We know right now that the Colts still have an outside shot at making the playoffs. They don't control their own destiny, but with a little bit of help, or I should say some much-needed help, and the win, Indianapolis could find themselves in the playoffs. So let's go ahead and bring in Mr. Kevin Bowen and see what's going on in the Indianapolis week, where they're going to be hosting the Tennessee Titans in their final regular season game. Just give me one quick second and let's bring Kevin in. All right, and again, welcome to Pure NFL Week 17, NFLExporter.com. Lance Goodman, your host, and I've got Kevin Bowen of the Indianapolis Colts with me. Happy New Year, Kevin. How's everything going today?
Happy New Year to you as well, Lance. How are you?
Things are going well. No complaints, and I tell you, for the Indianapolis Colts this year, what a chaotic year it's been, Kevin, coming into this season. No matter what we had in mind, it certainly wasn't the way that things unfolded this year with the injury, the team's record. Man, it's just been nothing less than a suspense thriller out there this year. And here Indianapolis is, again, still with an outside shot at making the playoffs, but really need some help and have to handle their business this week at home against Tennessee. I know this week, Kevin, headlines were starting to pour in that head coach Chuck Pagano, his days are kind of all but numbered in Indianapolis this year, especially if they don't make the playoffs. And so describe to me what the atmosphere was like this week in Indianapolis as they were approaching preparation for their last game of the season, possibly.
Yeah, it's definitely been a crazy week, and one that I don't think a lot of Colts fans or really anyone in that organization are used to. You know, you think about week 17 for the Indianapolis Colts, and a lot of times the debate is, do you rest guys? And now the debate this week was, who is going to play quarterback? I mean, Josh Freeman was signed on Monday. Ryan Lindley was signed on Tuesday. Those two guys haven't even been in the NFL this year. Haven't thrown a pass, obviously, in the NFL this year, and now one of them is going to start on Sunday. So, you know, you always hear about players being signed for teams early in the week and then going out playing some sort of role on that following Sunday. You never see it at the quarterback position. So I think that was kind of the first thing that kind of sums up this season, is all the quarterback issues. Seven different quarterbacks have been on the active roster. Six are on the active roster right now, which is just an absurd number. And it's one of those things where when you look back on the season, I think that's where people are going to point to. It's, you know, Matt Hasselbeck, yeah, was 5-3 as a starter, but, you know, why was Andrew Luck, why did this offense struggle at 2-5? I think that's kind of been some of the big storylines of this week, is trying to see where the Colts lost their playoff control and ultimately what's going to happen on Monday and what's going to happen in the days to come, because if there's one thing that we know of this organization, it's they've missed the playoffs just twice in the last 16 years, and both those times they made coaching changes. So change seems inevitable almost with all the reports out there, and it's going to be another crazy, I think, start to the new year for the Indianapolis Colts.
Sure, rightfully so, Kevin. And, you know, how is Indianapolis looking at this? I mean, is the, you know, seeing the quarterbacks with Matt Hasselbeck going down, Andrew Luck suffering an injury, although Luck's injury was him running with the football. It wasn't him just in the pocket. But, I mean, can we almost expect that the Colts' highest offseason, you know, priority is going to be the offensive line? Are they the ones that are kind of being held responsible for the quarterbacks getting banged up? I know that's something that certainly was a hot topic when Andrew got Luck got hurt prior to the injury that knocked him out for the season. Man, is that like a top priority for the Colts, making sure that they can, as much as possible? I know they brought in a couple veterans, but do you think that's something that you'd say is high on the priority list?
Definitely, and I think, you know, blaming the offensive line for Andrew Luck's injury is kind of a tough thing to do. I mean, he's definitely been hit too much in his four NFL seasons, so I think that's where more of the blame can go. You need to do a better job just protecting him in general, keeping him upright, letting him, you know, not hindering the offense from letting plays develop, especially down the field, which is an area that the Colts just haven't been able to tap into this year. And the quarterbacks get hurt around the NFL. You know, look at Tony Romo and Ben Roethlisberger. And, I mean, these are, you know, big names, especially Romo. I mean, that's probably the best offensive line in football. And he's been hurt, you know, now here for a second straight season. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's tough to really blame the offensive line, but that is still a need going in the offseason. I think especially interior offensive line is a need. I think you're all right at the tackles with Joe Wright and Anthony Costanzo, and I know they're even high on their rookie Denzel Good, but interior offensive line for me would be a need kind of in your mid-picks, you know, maybe third or fourth round. I think early on you need to find some defensive playmakers. You know, Robert Mathis is still playing at a pretty high level this year. Kendall Langford has had a nice year coming over in free agency. But those guys are both going to be 30 for Langford, and Mathis will be 35 next year. So you need to get younger on the defensive side of the ball. I think the Colts found some guys in last year's draft. I think now you need to find even more. So, you know, if you draft in the middle of the first round, you know, maybe one of those inside linebackers like a Reggie Ragland from Alabama, or, you know, Jalen Smith. I know he got hurt yesterday in the bowl game out of Notre Dame, or Miles Jack from UCLA. You know, maybe one of those guys, if they fall, that would be kind of the area where I would look at, because I think this team has enough on offense from a skill position standpoint if Frank Gore can come back. But the big thing for me is, yes, find some interior guys in the draft, but stay away from that in the first round. Find some defensive playmakers in the early rounds.
Yeah, sure thing, sure thing. And, you know, looking at this week, Kevin, with the potential for that coaching change to take place, are the players finding it hard to be motivated to get up this week to play Tennessee? Again, a situation that requires a lot of help, but Houston is playing a Jacksonville Jaguars team that certainly, I think, is going to want to come out and put up a fight, and certainly has some players, in particular on the offensive side of the football, that can get some things done. And the Jets certainly had their hands full as well. And so is it hard for the players to get up this week? I mean, do the players in this situation, I know Chuck Pagano is being, you know, highly held responsible. We remember earlier in the season with the offensive coordinator being let go as well. Do the players, are they kind of taking responsibility for this as well? Is this something that they feel is, you know, on themselves, and that they're ultimately the ones who put themselves in this position?
Sure. I think they definitely feel part of it, and they realize that, you know, this team did control its own destiny just a couple weeks ago. You know, that Jacksonville game in week 14, I mean, Colts were up, I think at one point it was 13-3, kind of late in the first half. They had a drive that was about ready to start in Jaguars territory. They could have gone up, you know, 16-3 or 20-3 at halftime and, you know, put that game away almost. And then you would be in this position here in week 17 and you wouldn't need nine games to go your way. And the next week, too, against Houston, you had a first-half lead against them at home, and you couldn't put them away. And Houston ended up coming into Lucas Oil Stadium and getting their first win in franchise history here in Indianapolis. So I think that's where the players feel most responsible. Despite all the injuries and despite all the adversity the team had to deal with here, they had chances in December to control their playoff fate and get a home game. And, you know, if you had got a home game, you could possibly get Andrew Luck back for the playoffs as well. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing that the play that are eating at this player, this team, I should say. And Chuck Pagano is a guy that they all rally around. So I don't think it's going to be one thing where the effort will be questioned by any means tomorrow. I don't see this team kind of lying down like you maybe have seen some other teams that that have had their postseason fate sealed. Yes, technically there is a small chance. You know, Colts need nine games to go their way week 17. So the chances aren't great, but I'd be very surprised if the team didn't give the same effort that we've seen really throughout the course of the season here to close out the regular season.
Yeah, certainly. I completely understand that. Man, I tell you, it's been, again, just a really interesting year. Injuries across the NFL, especially the big-time players, and certainly Andrew Luck have been an Iron Man his first couple years in the league. To see him miss this season, man, certainly kind of changed the tide. The Colts offense really, you know, we really never got a chance to see, I think, what ultimately, you know, the goal was or what the expectation was. And so we'll potentially have to wait a year for that. Let's say, Kevin, that the Colts do make it in the playoffs. How do you see them stacking up against the other teams right at this point right now? You're looking at potential first-round matchups, Cincinnati, and then also the wild cards, potentially the Chiefs, potentially the Jets, maybe the Steelers. How do you see the Colts, if they are able to get in, stacking up against some of those teams who seem to be playing much better than the Colts right now, if they are able to make it into the wild card?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, again, it can be very difficult for the Colts to get in. They need 9 games to go their way. So I haven't given a ton of thought to the possible wild card matchups. I do remember, you know, a couple weeks back when the Colts were, you know, again, had their own playoff fate in their hands, if they would have controlled their own destiny and won out. You know, Pittsburgh was really the team to avoid. I mean, they were kind of the hottest team in the league. The Colts really struggled with Pittsburgh in recent years. And that was, I think, something that the Colts really wanted to avoid. And so the Jets and the Chiefs seem like better options, especially the Chiefs. The Colts beat them in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Just from an outsider standpoint, yeah, the Chiefs have won. I think now it's 10 games in a row, but I just don't know if they have enough firepower on offense to go away from home. I think that Jets team is still a scary team. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brandon Marshall have come over in the offseason. Have had some great, great years for Todd Bowles. That defense can travel. Chris Ivory's a good enough running back. So I think the Jets would be a scary out for the wild card teams. And it looks like right now they're going to get in. Pittsburgh is on the outside looking in. So if I had to rank, I guess, those three wild card teams as teams that I would want to avoid, from a Colts standpoint and, frankly, from any team standpoint, I would put Pittsburgh atop that list. Even though they lost last week, I still don't think teams want to see them in the playoffs. I'd put the Jets a close number two, and I'd definitely put the Chiefs at number three.
All right, sounds good. And then last but not least, Kevin, before we let you go today, I'm quite sure NFL fans out there want to know the latest news on quarterback Andrew Luck. We talked initially about that up to potentially 8-week window, just really depending on how it was healing, what was going on with the team, et cetera, et cetera. Let's say if the Colts are able to get in the playoffs, is there any possibility we could see Andrew Luck, or at this point, you know, is it kind of safe to say that his season is probably done? Is it? Do you think that the Colts are kind of seriously considering maybe holding him out and just kind of giving him a fresh start next season?
Yeah, no, I think the Colts are definitely holding out hope that he can play in the playoffs. Again, it's a long shot for the Colts to make the playoffs, but Andrew Luck and Matt Hasselbeck have both been ruled out for Week 17, but neither of them have gone on injured reserve. So I mentioned earlier 5 quarterbacks on the active roster right now. The reason for that is because they do think that they could get Luck and or Hasselbeck back for the playoffs if the miracle happens in Week 17 and the Colts do get in. So Luck has now practiced in a limited role for a third straight week. He needs to be cleared for team drills and practice. If he's cleared for that, he'll be cleared for game action. So, you know, if all those crazy scenarios happen in Week 17, it'll be another quarterback watch for the Colts as they head into the wild card.
All right, sounds good, Kevin. Well, as always, thank you so much for joining us. And obviously, that is going to be a game we'll be watching very closely tomorrow. And one way or another, we'll be speaking with you soon. It'll either be to talk about the Colts' first-round playoff matchup, or we'll be bringing the into the season by doing our year-end review. Make sure and have a great weekend. We certainly wish you guys the best of luck. And again, Kevin, thank you for your time. It's always great having you on Pure NFL.
Always good to be on. Happy New Year, Lance.
Okay, thank you. All right, that's going to do it for Kevin Bowen. He's been great for us all season long covering the Indianapolis Colts. Make sure that you go to NFLExporter.com. Go to the Pure NFL page. You'll be able to see Kevin Bowen there and his great work with the Indianapolis Colts. You can also find him on Twitter and Facebook. We always post the show's information up on the website and the social media pages. So make sure you follow Kevin. You can keep up directly with him for all the latest news and information regarding Colts football. Let's run to a quick break. When we come back, it'll be Mike Leinart. He's our guy here on Pure NFL, the insider with all the good information about the Philadelphia Eagles. We know this week the Eagles decided to part ways with Chip Kelly, something that we had kind of been insinuating and kind of dancing with all season long. And once the Eagles were eliminated from playoff contention, the hammer, the sword came down, and that certainly was a move that sent shockwaves through the NFL, and particularly the media, the coaching staff, and Chip Kelly, no longer head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, that team has a lot of answers, a lot of questions and question marks that they need to answer. And so we'll run to a quick break. When we come back, we'll bring in Mike Leinart, and again, we'll be talking Philadelphia Eagles football on Pure NFL. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, everyone, welcome back to Pure NFL. Your host, Lance Goodman, just got through talking with Kevin Bowen. He's with the Indianapolis Colts, and obviously, again, for Indianapolis, in dire straits here, needing a ton of help and a win at home against Tennessee to get the job done. And, man, I tell you, it'll be interesting what a year it was out in Indianapolis. I mean, that Andrew Luck injury really sent a ripple effect through that team. Again, coming into the season, based upon what Luck did last year, when you looked at T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief and Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen, you enter into the equation Andre Johnson, running back like Frank Gore. You talk about rookie wideout Philip Dorsett just for some nice depth. You know, you're looking at Andrew Luck and you're saying this guy is on his way to a huge, huge passing year. A lot of records being broken, predicted, and just got off to a very slow start. And injuries really caught up with Andrew Luck this year, and he's missed the majority of the season. It's definitely hurt, you know. I mean, you look at the NFL this year and the amount of big name players who went down, that list just continues to grow in size each and every year. And so, you know, I hope there's some type of way that it can slow down because, man, not good for football. I mean, to miss, you know, guys like Luck and Marshawn Lynch and Jamal Charles and Le'Veon Bell and Calvin Benjamin and Jordy Nelson. And, you know, I mean, it's a very lengthy list. You know, that hurts. You know, that hurts. That's a lot of good football players who are not on the football field and doing what they need to do for their ball clubs. And it seems like Indianapolis kind of got caught up in the wash this year again, really never able to get traction and get really that offense clicking in the way that they anticipated. You know, Andrew Luck out of the lineup, you know, that's not possible. And certainly, you know, some things with the Colts, their offensive line, they know that's something that they need to address. Their defense got put under a lot of pressure as well, a lot of injuries in that secondary for Indianapolis. And so, you know, you see they're a team that certainly is heavily relied upon Andrew Luck. And like any team, you know, staying healthy, that's something that's key. So I tell you, that's been the one thing about the NFL this year. Coming into next year, for the most part, you don't know what to expect. And I think that's the beauty of it. I think that's why people really love NFL football. It's not the monotony. It's not the same thing every single year. Game counts every Sunday. And, you know, coming in the next season, I tell you, with the way that the waiver wire has worked out this year in fantasy football, just the way that fantasy football as a whole works, you know, you're looking at a lot of coaching changes. You've got a lot of backup running backs this year who played extremely well. What do those guys do? Are they just sitting on the bench next year? Are more committees added? It's just a ton of questions that have to be answered. And kind of moving over now, we'll bridge that piece together and start talking Philadelphia Eagles football. And as I mentioned before we went to commercial break, that Chip Kelly is now the former coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles got embarrassed on Saturday Night Football last week, let division rival Washington Redskins walk in there and score 38 points on them. And that was it. That put the nail in the coffin. And things, as we know in Philadelphia, just haven't gone as planned. Chip Kelly, unfortunately, in a situation where you're looking at what he did in year one, you're looking at where he's at now, and it's been a decrease and a decline in wins, in production, in efficiency every single year. And as we mentioned, the hammer came down. And surprisingly, I should say unsurprisingly, the fan base around Philadelphia, very happy about that. Mike Leiner, who covers the Eagles for us, he's right there in Pennsylvania, very close to the situation. He was Trump-type this week as far as making sure he was where he needed to be to bring you the coverage live and direct, straight from the mouthpiece of owner Jeffrey Lurie, of former head coach Chip Kelly, and other individuals who may have had a hand or played a role in relinquishing his duties. And so give me one second. We're going to bring in Mike Leiner. We're going to talk Philadelphia Eagles football and pure NFL. All right, I apologize. We're having just a tad bit of trouble bringing Mike in. So just give us a quick second here to get him all set up and bring him on the line. And Mike will be answering a lot of questions, I think. This Philadelphia Eagles team, I think that's the biggest thing that you're looking at, is you're saying, wow, looking at what Chip Kelly has done to that roster, looking at what's on that roster currently, where do you go? What direction do you go? How do you take this team? How can you make this team a contender? I think that's the biggest advantage they have. You look at the NFC East division, and, as you've seen this year, none of those teams really wanted to run away with it. It didn't take until, basically the latter portion of the season for a team to finally step up and get a couple of victories to kind of distance themselves. So I think that's the one positive for Philadelphia, that building within your division, which is the easiest route to go to get a playoff berth by winning your division. It's not a division that is dominated. Maybe like if you're seeing what you're seeing out of the New England Patriots, over the years, or even the Denver Broncos, the success they've had in the Peyton Manning era there over the last 3 to 4 years. There's not a team in that division. It's just that flat out dominant. So I think that certainly is going to help the situation. But, how appealing is this job? I mean, again, you look at the roster and a lot of unproven talent, a lot of letdowns, a lot of disappointments. Just give me 1 second here. Again, we're trying to bring in Mike Leiner for Pure NFL. He's our insider there with the Philadelphia Eagles. Just give us a second. Let us go back to the phone lines and attempt to bring Mike in again. All right, I'll tell you what, while we are waiting for Mike here to get situated on the line, let's go ahead and talk about the big game that you got going on tonight, and that is going to be the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. You're looking at Tampa Bay in Carolina. And I like what the NFL does. When you get down to the final weeks of the season, they put the games at the same time so teams can't just kind of tank it. And so you got Carolina at home. They win. They're the number one overall seed. The path to the Super Bowl is going to go to Carolina. If somehow, some way, Tampa Bay is able to win that football game, Arizona has their hands full. They're playing at home against Seattle. And a win for them, coupled with the Carolina loss, would afford them home field advantage throughout. If both those teams win, then obviously Carolina's going to get that seed. And if Arizona loses and Carolina loses, then Carolina still gets that seed. And so I think those games are certainly ones that are going to be of interest. And note, I don't think there's any question that Carolina and Arizona have been the top two teams in the NFC this year. It's going to be really interesting to see how those wild card teams fare. They seem like they are a couple steps behind. You're looking at Seattle potentially, I think, being the most dangerous, their championship pedigree on a good day, what their defense can do. And Russell Wilson still is a playmaker. He's a winner. They've been to 2 straight Super Bowls. So they know what it takes in the playoffs to win, even on the road. I think they are the biggest pest. I think you look at Green Bay, you look at Minnesota, and you look at the Redskins, who, they're an interesting suspect as well. You know, they play this week at Dallas. That game has no meaning to them. They're even going to play their starters. But I think the Redskins are certainly the other wild card, because you have no idea what to expect. But you do know that if a Seattle comes walking in there, you'd have to give them a favor. Right now, I can't say how much more that Minnesota may be better than Washington. Kirk Cousins, that offense playing with a heck of a lot of confidence. Jordan Reed emerged as an elite tight end. And I think the one thing they lack is a running game. I think that's where potentially they could find themselves in trouble. I think if you look at Minnesota right now, how they're kind of one-dimensional on the ground, if you shut AP down, then, you know, in the air, you don't have proven commodities. I think it's the same thing here with this team, that, you know, if they're unable to get anything going there, they're kind of dead in the water. Getting one-dimensional, that being Washington, and not being able to run Alfred Morris and Matt Jones. So, you know, any team to me right now that gets one-dimensional, it comes a little bit easier to game plan for. That's why I think Seattle is really the team that's going to be the potential stumbling block for a powerhouse like Carolina or Arizona, especially when those teams are playing at home, which both have already secured to do in the first round. All right, let's run to a quick break here. When we come back, hopefully Mike Leiner is all set to join us. You're listening to Pure NFL with Lance Goodman, NFLExporter.com. All right, everyone, welcome back to Pure NFL Week 17. It's the NFL Exporter, and it's time to talk some Philadelphia Eagles football. Let's go ahead and bring in our insider live from Pennsylvania. It's Mike Leinart. Happy New Year to you, Mike. How's everything going today?
Hey, Happy New Year, Lance. It's going well, going well. It's time for a new era in Philly football.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And let's not waste any time. Kind of got the fans already prepped and ready to go for this one. And we're talking about Chip Kelly. You look at how the 2016 season came in for ownership, for fans, for the players, for that coach. He is no longer the head coach and running some different front office activities for the Philadelphia Eagles, a subpar average season. And again, if you look at what Philadelphia was able to do in his first season, each year, record getting worse, you know, Pro Bowl talent players being let go of, and, you know, thing kind of just took a downward spiral, kind of one brick at a time, till this thing came crashing down this year with the embarrassing loss to the Washington Redskins last Saturday on national TV. Philly, if they would have won that game, as bad as they had played, or inconsistent as they had played all year, still would have had a shot at the playoffs, but not able to get it done. I think the manner it was done certainly had a lot to do with this. And so talk to us, Mike. You know, you were there all week in Pennsylvania. First of all, how did the city, the fans, react to Chip Kelly and the announcements of him being fired as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, I think most Eagles fans decided to celebrate New Year's a little early. There was a lot of parties around the city. You know, I'm joking, obviously, but most polls show that 80% of the Eagles fans agreed with the move. It was time for Chip Kelly to move on. He came in, he completely blew up a very talented roster, and pretty much left it in shambles. And I kind of feel bad for the next guy to take over, because this isn't going to be a quick fix. Hopefully Jeffrey Lurie will have a little bit more patience with the next guy trying to repair the damage that Chip Kelly left his franchise in, because it is a mess.
Definitely. And, man, with fans being, you know, relieved and happy that he was no longer. What about the players? What about that locker room? This is a team that, you know, this year in particular, just inconsistent. A lot of ups and downs. I'm quite sure those emotional swings we've kind of seen at various times on the football field. But what were the players' reaction? I mean, in particularly offensive side of the football, that's where Chip Kelly's area of expertise came in. And, you know, it was supposed to be an area where the Eagles were able to excel, but not able to get much going and established. What was the players' reaction to Chip Kelly being let go? You know, how was the locker room at that point? You know, did players believe in them? Was it a divided locker room? You know, how does that work out? Because a lot of times, you know, even though a coach may be under a lot of public duress, maybe he still has his players, or some players, you know, are still latched on.
So how did that work out? You know, how did the players react? What type of impact do you think that it had on the players on the Eagles roster?
Well, most of the players, like you know, like they come out in the media and they say all the right things. It's still a business to them. So, I mean, they still have to say the right things. But, you know, you hear the whispers behind the scenes. Chip Kelly wasn't a very personable guy. You know, when it came to being in the front office, in the locker room, walking through the NovaCare complex, whatever, if you happen to run across him, he wouldn't even bat an eye. He wouldn't say hi. He would just walk right past you. He, you know, everywhere from the janitorial staff all the way up to the players, no one really had a heartfelt like for Chip Kelly. I mean, it's a major difference from when Andy Reid was here. Andy Reid, you know, cared about his players. He would talk to his players. He would stop in the hall and ask everyone how they're doing, you know. It was completely the opposite way with Chip Kelly. It was all business. He'd walk in, do his job, and go home. He had no personal relationships at all in the office. Most people, you know, didn't like him personally. But, you know, he's a relatively good football coach. But that's more suited for college, things like that. People were just getting sick and tired of the, you know, the times you got to be in bed and the sports science and the drinks and the shakes and whatnot. I mean, it was just – It really wore on this team. You know, he lost the locker room a while ago, and it was just time to move on. I mean, after the in the middle of the Redskins game, Jason Peters pulled himself out of the game and says, "I'm not playing for a team that's not going to the playoffs. I play for this owner. I don't play for this coach." And that kind of was a defining moment for the team. And Jeffrey Lurie just said, "Enough's enough." And you know, once the Eagles were eliminated from playoff competition.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, how much accountability is ownership taking in this, you know, kind of take us through that thought process or, you know, how that's working, Mike, for us in the front office. I mean, when you have a situation like this happen and occur, then obviously, you know, the decisions that were made, Chip Kelly had to, we're assuming, earn some type of trust. You know, there had to be some positive or good things that they seen in him that they thought that, you know, that responsibility that they could hand over to him. You were kind of hearing echoes throughout the course of the week that, you know, he was given too much too soon. How does ownership look at this? How does Jeffrey Lurie look at this? You know, is this something that just went awry? You know, this is kind of Chip Kelly's doing, or, you know, in hindsight now, kind of looking back on things, does ownership feel that maybe they didn't make the best decisions and, you know, they kind of have something to do with, you know, how everything worked out in the long run as well?
Well, Jeffrey Lurie said in his press conference that, you know, when he gave this, you know, he gave all the power to Chip Kelly when he gave him the, you know, personal decisions and everything. He basically told him, you know, this is going to be do or die. You know, you step in, you want to do this, do it right. And, you know, it's a fine line between taking that step to greatness or taking that step to mediocrity. I mean, we were back-to-back 10-6 seasons. You know, you either go 13-3 or you end up like the Eagles did this year, and they're probably looking at 7-9. It's they're hopefully 6-10, to be honest with you. But it's the kind of season that, you know, you look back on it and you can't go through another offseason like you just did, because, I mean, with the way DeMarco Murray played, you know, you either got to take your $45 million running back and, you know, give him an offense that he can run in, or, you know, you got to bite the bullet on him. I mean, it's a rough decision. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie sat there and he said he talked to a bunch of his players. He was listening to his players, but, you know, overall, with the input that he had came from everything that he saw. And now that, now that Chip's gone, Howie Roseman steps back into the player personnel decision, and you know, the coaching search begins. And, you know, hopefully whatever coach we hire will bring in an actual GM, because a lot of people in Philly don't really trust Howie Roseman and what he's brought to the table thus far. But, you know, it's going to be a search to see what happens, to see what goes on with the front office. I think Jeffrey Lurie is kind of playing a waiting game before he wants to, you know, announce Howie Roseman as the new GM. Because, you know, if he brings in like an old school coach, let's say he brings in a Herm Edwards or a John Gruden or somebody along those lines, it's very unlikely. But if that were to occur, those guys have GMs that they like to work with, people that they like to work with as their personnel guys. And they'll probably bring in somebody like that to be as the new quote-unquote GM. But if they hire a new coach, let's say Adam Gase or Sean McDermott, something along those lines, I think that's when he'll announce Howie Roseman as the new GM. Lance? Phil.
Okay, Mike. Okay, Mike, I apologize about there, and I apologize to everyone as well. Just having some technical difficulties this morning here with the line. But, Mike, thank you so much for calling back in. And before we had that difficulty, you were just speaking on the responsibility that the Lurie's, Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, took and how ownership was looking at things. And so now, Mike, let's take a look here now into the immediate future. You know, the world doesn't stop. Philadelphia now, as you were alluding to, a different roster now than what we've seen a couple years ago when the Eagles were able to win the NFC East division. You got a lot of question marks looming around this team as far as Sam Bradford. Will he be returning as quarterback? DeMarco Murray, what's his status? What's his situation now? Because Chip Kelly was also in charge of the offense, so how that could potentially factor in. Byron Maxwell, he was a high-profile free agent. He didn't quite come over and produce. I think this Eagles team is one of the teams that certainly in the offseason has his work cut out to try to at least remain competitive in the NFC East division. Man, what do you think this offseason is potentially going to look like with all the question marks that are going to be surrounding Philadelphia in the offseason?
Well, this is almost like a blessing in disguise in a little bit. I mean, a guy like DeMarco Murray, this obviously is going to help him out a lot because you're not going to get that zone run crap where, you know, you're running the ball out of the shotgun. You know, a guy like Byron Maxwell, you bring in a new coach who brings in a defensive coordinator. You know, they may play to Byron Maxwell's strengths, which is more of a zone coverage, where all year Chip Kelly had him in more of a man-to-man coverage. You know, a lot of these guys that the Eagles have on this roster who are the higher-paid guys, this could end up benefiting them a lot because if you bring in the right coach, the system could fit them a lot better. You know, let's say, you know, Sean Payton or John Harbaugh get released from their contracts from their respective teams, they would be huge upgrades to the coaching staff here. And, you know, bring in a winning attitude and the guys that have won Super Bowls, you know, it could really help out this team. You know, the players stand to benefit big time. When it comes to Sam Bradford, personally, I could do without seeing him in the Eagles uniform next year. But, you know, then again, that leads to the coach and who they want to bring in. You know, most new coaches want to bring in their guy, quote unquote. But you're going to need to sign a guy for a year or two. And even if you draft a player in the first round that you plan to groom, you're still going to need someone to make the transition. So whoever the Eagles, you know, bring in to coach is going to play a huge role in what this team does in the future, obviously.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, speaking of Chip Kelly, I know that we were seeing headlines, a lot of them apologetic, him feeling like, you know, being unable to get a playoff win for the Eagles, unable to take the team to the Super Bowl. Just with the way things unfolded, he seemed rather apologetic. Hearing directly from Chip Kelly this week, Mike, out there in Philadelphia, what was the reception? You know, were fans lenient and understanding? Did the stuff that he said make sense? Did he seem sincere? How did that situation play out as far as Chip Kelly and his thoughts and feelings as far as having to move on from Philadelphia? Obviously, you know, the end goal of a championship. And I think just being successful year in and year out, never really seeing what he thought or planned could happen for that team, not be able to come to fruition. Man, how'd that situation play out this week, Mike?
Well, you know, Eagles fans were just kind of sick of Chip Kelly. They're glad he's gone. You know, it all comes down to adapting. He just wouldn't adapt his style to the NFL. You know, the NFL found a way to beat his system, and instead of changing it up or, you know, being ahead of the curve or anything like that, he just kept trying to push the same thing over and over and over again, and that's almost the definition of insanity. And, you know, everyone was just kind of, you know, sick of it. Let's move on. Let's try something different. This did not work, this whole college coach experiment. So let's move on. Let's try something different. You know, whatever it is, as long as it's different, I think the Eagles fans will be happy for at least a short term. But, you know, it's really about winning. You know, if you can win in this town, you're loved. You're beloved. And, you know, it's amazing how much winning will cure. You know, so it's a matter of bringing in someone that can bring a winning team back to the city. And we understand it's going to take a couple of years to repair the damage that's been done, but, you know, we need to start winning again. We're so starved for some sort of championship in this town.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, I think, Mike, like you said, looking at what's happened over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years, time flies. And it was like Chip Kelly was there one day and things went well. I can remember that that initial Monday night football game against the Redskins and seeing LeSean McCoy run like crazy all over the Redskins and, you know, Philadelphia being 11-5 in the first year and just, you know, coming up short, taking a tough loss at home against the Saints team that still had Jimmy Graham and Drew Brees a couple years younger and some things of that nature. And, you know, how do you think now moving forward, is the college coach just absolutely out of the question? You know, are the Eagles at this point, I'm pretty sure, looking for somebody that they can stick in there as a staple? And like you said, it's going to take time. You know, this team's going to have a new identity. They have to believe in this coaching staff. Like you said, they're going to kind of have to build this thing out. Is a college coach out the question? You know, you mentioned a couple other NFL coaches, like how it is every year. You got a lot of coordinators who become hot. Pretty much the most successful offensive and defensive coordinators around the league, who maybe if the Eagles had their way would be somebody they would potentially target, or do you see them really courting in the offseason?
Well, I mean, obviously I'll wait for the season to end and see how things play out. The rumors are Sean Payton is going to be available, and he's obviously going to be on top of the list if that's possible. John Harbaugh in Baltimore, he's had a bad season. If he's released, the Eagles obviously would love to get a hold of him. He's an old Philly guy. And then you look at the coordinators, like you said, Sean McDermott down in Carolina. He spent many years up here in Philly, and he would be a good fit. And there's Josh McDaniels with the Patriots. If he's looking for a second go-around, you know, the Eagles may be interested. As far as college coaches, I don't think the Eagles would go that route again, just, you know, because of the huge failure that pretty much was left in, you know, the taste in Eagles fans' mouths and the players. They kind of want someone who's, you know, been there before and you know, knows what it's like to be in the NFL. I mean, that's definitely, you know, a big part of it. You know, I think if a college coach has an NFL pedigree, it's possible, but, you know, you're definitely not going to bring in someone who has never had any sort of NFL experience, because what we just experienced was a guy who had no NFL experience, and boy, it failed miserably.
Definitely, for sure. And to end the segment today, Mike, what can we expect to see Sunday? Do you think players have pretty much melded in? I mean, obviously, they know that they're not going to be in the playoffs. They know they're going to have a new head coach next year. That certainly can have some implications on, you know, what players return, what players are gone, going out to play the Giants. Do you think the Philadelphia Eagles players are eager to play this game, or do you think it's a situation where just overall maybe everyone's just kind of ready for this season to end and just kind of get a fresh start on everything?
Yeah, I think mentally the players have checked out. You know, Byron Maxwell and Benny Logan have already been ruled out for this game. I think Odell Beckham's, you know, got a little bit of a bad taste in his mouth from having to sit out the Minnesota game. And, you know, I think he's going to come in and torch the Eagles pretty bad. I think this is just, you know, not a good matchup. But, you know, they're obviously going to come out. They're going to go through the motions and they'll play the game. But I think ultimately the Eagles end up losing this one about 35-17. Which,
okay,
by the way, could end up being Tom Coughlin's last game. I believe he's going to resign. All reports out of New York, he's going to resign after this game. So, you know, I think the Giants will come out with a little bit more heat than the Eagles, obviously.
No, I agree with you there. You're absolutely right. That division is certainly being shaken up by head coaches, and that certainly appears to look that way for Tom Coughlin as well. Mike, as always, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We'll be looking forward to speaking with you real soon. We'll be wrapping up the year with you, with the Eagles, and obviously this is a team that certainly is going to be focusing on the offseason moving forward. So we'll be having some fun taking a look at what things may be held in a draft and free agency, and kind of really look at how this Eagles team may be able to rebound sooner than later and stay in contention in the NFC East. Great talking to y'all. As always, Mike, make sure you enjoy the weekend and the last regular season game of the first regular season game of 2016.
Yeah, happy New Year, Lance. You guys take care.
All right, thanks. All right, so that's going to wrap it up there. That was Mike Leinart with the Philadelphia Eagles. Great talking to him. Make sure you can follow him on Twitter at EagleMike89. That's, again, EagleMike89. You can follow him on Twitter, and then on Facebook, he's at Mike Leinart. That's Mike, and Leinart is spelled L-I-E-N-E-R-T. He's with Pure NFL. He handles the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's now move over to our guy, James Morris. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals football team. It's been doing a great job on Pure NFL all year. And, man, I tell you, we've got to hear a common theme. We talked about Andrew Luck with the Colts earlier and Kevin Bowen, Matt Hasselbeck, those guys out of action. We talked with Mike Leinart. We know that their quarterback situation has been anything but stable, and that brings us over to James Morris and the Cincinnati Bengals, and obviously Andy Dalton, the star quarterback, went down with an injury a couple weeks ago. A.J. McCarron was in. He was playing decent enough. Unsuspectedly, we didn't even really see it at the time it happened. He hurt his hand or his wrist. He's going to miss this week's game. Now Cincinnati down to a third-string quarterback, and with the playoffs right around the corner, a lot of question marks now all of a sudden. Injury starting to take its toll late in the season on the Cincinnati Bengals team. Happy New Year to you, James. How's everything going for you today?
Going great. You know, just getting used to the cold weather and new year, and everything's looking forward, starting it off right.
For sure, for sure. And so here we are, Week 17, final regular season game, but the first football game of 2016 this week, full slate of action on Sunday, no Thursday night, no Saturday night, no Monday night football. And for the Cincinnati Bengals, you look at their record and what they've been able to accomplish, which is an 11-4 mark, and winning the AFC North Division. Certainly great accomplishments. No complaints there. Great job once again by head coach Marvin Lewis and a roster that you heard last week. You know, Phil Simms say that, man, when he took, John Gruden say on Monday Night Football, when he took a look at this team from A to Z, top to bottom in the roster in the preseason, he felt it was the most talented roster in the NFL, but injury starting to catch up again with Cincinnati. And so I'll just let you chime in, James, this week, especially after hearing the injury to A.J. McCarron. What was the tone? What was the vibe? That was a very tough loss on Monday Night Football, the fashion in which they lost in the game, in which Cincinnati competed very hard and came up just short at the end. So what was the vibe there this week surrounding Cincinnati after a tough loss, and then hearing the news that A.J. McCarron likely is not going to be able to go this Sunday as well, and a game that they definitely need to win to hold on to some type of prospects of Denver potentially losing and being able to get a first-round bye and have the number two seed?
Well, when you play on the road, obviously, it's always tough. Denver has a great defense, and Cincinnati playing in Denver, you know, cold weather, high altitude, makes it even tougher. And then when you have a backup quarterback in there, you know, against their stout secondary and tough run defense, it's always, like I said, it's always going to be a tough game. The fans know it. Comes down to the last kick or the last second, you know, and wasn't even close left. It was like he kicked it to the sideline left. And so you think we have a chance, you know, and then at the very end, bad snap, you know, tough fumble. Really wasn't AJ's fault. And, you know, lose the game. So it's tough. You want to win every game. Every fan wants you to win every game. You know, they all want you to go 16-0, but that's tough to happen. And AJ did have a problem with his wrist, but he's actually been upgraded to probable now. So they worked on his wrist all week, you know, did a lot of therapy with it, and now the Bengals are saying he's now probable. So it doesn't look like we're going to have to play the third string quarterback. McCarron's should be available as long as there's no setbacks. So we still have a chance at this, you know, this week securing maybe a better seed, you know, if some things go right. So it's looking positive.
For sure, for sure. And I think that'll be of the utmost importance. If things do play out how expected, San Diego is the team that's going to basically come limping into Denver in that final regular season game. Obviously, Denver's going to be favorite there, but, you know, we have seen stranger things happen. But if Cincinnati does end up in a situation where they do have to play next week and they are hosting a wild card game, you're talking about potentially the Steelers, the Chiefs, the Jets. Those would be the potential opponents that they would be facing, and all of those teams, certainly a lot of talent, tough defenses. I think A.J. McCarron or whoever the starting quarterback is going to be anticipated to play that following week, it would be good for them to be able to get the reps in this week and get that chemistry and continuity and, most important, the confidence down. McCarron, since he's taken over, really hasn't done a whole lot. You know, that game against San Francisco, the defense for Cincinnati really dominated that one. You didn't see McCarron with huge numbers there. And then last week, like you said, against any team, a Denver Broncos defense, especially in Denver, is not going to fare too well. So I think, you know, an efficient game, and particularly passing the football, that's what's going to come down to what's going to be needed. Speaking of the quarterback position, what's the latest status on Andy Dalton? Is there any realistic shot of him playing next week, or do all indications really still point towards what I guess the initial timetable was, which was the possibility of him being back in a divisional matchup?
Well, Andy's going to visit a hand specialist on Monday, probably have the cast removed from his thumb. But the realistic chances of him playing next week are, you know, highly unlikely. He's still really weeks away, because not only did he have to get the cast off on Monday, but he still has to, you know, test that thumb out, see how much he can grip the ball, and then see how strong his hand is to be able to throw the ball. So just like, you know, when you or I break a finger, break an arm, when you get the cast off the next day, you're not, you know, going and doing all the activities you used to do. So it's unlikely he plays. If the Bengals had to play in the first round of the playoffs, you know, in the wild card round, it's unlikely that he'll play. It's going to be hard. You know, I mean, McCarron, he's been stable. But it's hard for that backup quarterback to come in at the end of the season with so much on the line, not just physically, not just from a tool standpoint, from a guy who hasn't really got any first-team reps, you know, but also from a mental standpoint that he has to come in and try to keep this momentum rolling when, you know, the team is running and he's been standing still for, you know, 13 weeks essentially. So it's tough, but Andy is getting close, but he's probably still 2 weeks away at best, 2-3 weeks away at best.
Sure, and then give us the latest update on Tyler Eifert. Really hated to see him go out. He was having a spectacular season. I think if he could have finished out the regular season, it would have been difficult, obviously, because of the name. But I think his numbers certainly would have had him as the top, really should have been the top vote getter for the starting tight end position in the AFC. At the time of his injury, he was leading the NFL with 13 receiving touchdowns, and really just had been a matchup nightmare all year long for opposing linebackers or safeties. What's his availability? I think the timing of his injury certainly hurt as well. A big part of what Cincinnati likes to do, especially in the red zone on third downs. He could be a guy who could help A.J. McCarron out an awful lot.
He's listed as probable this week. He's got back to practice. He's at probable. He's, you know, 99.9% likely to play. So he's going to be in. Obviously, he's had a great season. You know, it's hard as a tight end in the AFC to get any love because of this guy I've never heard of, but his name is Rob Gronkowski. You know, I've never heard of him. I don't know who he is. But Eifert apparently knows who he is, and so he's battling and struggling, and it's always going to be hard to make it to the Pro Bowl with a guy like that in front of you. So, you know, he's had a great season from a fantasy standpoint. You know, owners love him. From an NFL standpoint, you know, he is probably the number one. You could make a strong case for him to be the starting tight end in the AFC. But, you know, if nothing else, he's definitely in that number two slot for tight ends in the AFC and possibly in the NFL. He's taken a huge step forward. This is what they drafted him to be. You know, he came in his rookie year, had a tough go, you know, injuries. But he's come in this year and shown exactly what he can be. Offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson has him dialed in. Andy Dalton knows exactly what he's got in him. And the chemistry with him, Dalton, A.J. Green, you know, the whole entire offense, it's clicking. And this team is moving forward. So expect him to be in the lineup. If you're in a fantasy league that's playing this week or one of those daily leagues, he will be starting.
Okay, that sounds good. And, you know, is there any feeling whatsoever of kind of like you know, here we go again. How is Marvin Lewis, how is the coaching staff keeping these guys mentally prepared? I mean, you know, you look at coming down the stretch here and, you know, you look back to last year, injuries were a major part of this, you know, lost Marvin Jones for the season, Eifert was lost for the season, A.J. Green was battling a foot injury and some other nagging injuries, Giovanni Bernard wasn't able to stay healthy all year long, you know, here you go this year and playing very well. And, you know, the loss to Pittsburgh with Dalton going out is understandable. Really, the losses that Cincinnati had this year are understandable. I think the one against Houston on Monday Night Football, that was a huge letdown. But outside of that, I think any losses that you see from Cincinnati are merited, you know, Andy Dalton or not. Pittsburgh is a division rival, a team that's got a lot of talent. But what's the mental aspect of this thing? How are these young veteran players, I would say, you know, most of the players on Cincinnati's roster, they're young, but they're veterans in the sense that they've been a part of the playoffs over those past, you know, three or four consecutive years. So what's the mindset now? This is a team that, you know, has been one and done for the last three or four years since Dalton and A.J. Green and that regime came in there. And here they are again, you know, Tyler Eifert, you know, banged up end of the year, A.J. Green battling some nagging injuries. We mentioned Andy Dalton's going to miss the game. McCarron's a little banged up. There might even be on the defensive side of the football some injuries that you may want to update us on. But that is a unit by far that's been solid all year long. Great to see Geno Atkins back in Pro Bowl form. Shane Ray, he's a guy that should get a lot of attention, that linebacker. Finally, Ray Malaluga able to stay on the football field. We see Vontaze Burfict back out there, physical. The secondary with the exception of Darqueze Dennard, been able to stay up on his feet. And so tell us the mindset. Does this team, James, have the mental toughness? Is Marvin Lewis, is the coaching staff really preaching the right things to these guys to make them believe that despite maybe any obstacle that comes in their way, they've got to find a way to get it done this year?
The mindset with the team is great. They know what they got. You know, the players, the coaches, the team itself, they know exactly what they have. They know exactly what they have to do. Marvin Lewis is a great coach. Hugh Jackson is exactly the offensive coordinator that they needed to come in and do this. The defense is getting healthy-ish, you know, as healthy as you can get at week 17 in the NFL. The offense is healthy. But just like with any team in the NFL, as the season starts grinding into that second half, you start getting into the, you know, the double digits, week 14, 15, 16, injuries are killing teams. You know, there's not a team in the NFL that when Tuesday, Wednesday morning happens, there's not, you know, five, six guys in the training room getting worked on. So for now, the biggest injury the Bengals have is Dalton. You know, McCarron is a little banged up, but like I said, he's probable. Eifert, banged up, but probable, you know, with the concussion. The only real question mark on the defense for this week would be Vontaze Burfict. You know, is that ankle good? But he's been in the training room getting it worked on all week. He's probably going to play also. You know, the secondary has been actually one of the more underrated as far as, you know, the NFL fans and the media goes. You know, you look at that secondary, Dre Kirkpatrick, you know, you have Adam Jones, you have, you know, Reggie Nelson. Those guys are performing at a high, high level, and they're not getting the love that they should. So there's a little bit, you know, the fans, like I said earlier, they want you to win every game. And when you start losing a few, Dalton goes down, Eifert goes down, you know, like anybody, you do have to look at it and say, man, here we go again. Is this what's happening again? And it all hinges on how well this team can perform in the playoffs. You know, everybody calls Dalton a bust, and they want him to win his first game in the playoffs, and they want him to get over this hump. But if you remember back to guys like Peyton Manning, you know, he didn't win his first playoff game until many years into the league, you know. So people need to really look at this and understand that it takes time. You know, it's not a 2-year, 3-year turnaround. It's not the NBA where you have, you know, 10 players, 12 players on a team, and you really just have to do a minor roster adjustment, bring in a couple of free agents to turn this thing around. These are 52 players, you know, plus your practice squad. So it's a big step to turn a team around. But this team is definitely in the hunt. They've won the AFC North. You know, they have nothing to prove to the NFL because they've done it. Now they just need to get healthy. McCarron is a quality quarterback, maybe not that elite level, but he's quality. He can get you to win the games. And you got A.J. Green, Giovanni Bernard, Jeremy Hill, Tyler Eifert, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu. I mean, you could just go down the list, and this is one of the deeper teams in the NFL for talent. So the fans, you know, there is a little bit of that, here we go again, but they still have faith. The team has faith. The mood in Cincinnati is great, and the coaching staff has these guys dialed in. They know exactly what they're doing, and they have complete faith in everyone on the team who's out there playing.
All right, sounds good. Well, we'll certainly get a chance to see tomorrow. You got a pesky Baltimore Ravens team coming in who's confident after their win, their Super Bowl last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they'll be coming in, and that spoiler roll again, I think, for a lot of these teams where these games where these teams know it's their final game of the season, they'll be leaving it all on the line, and we'll be talking to you next week, James. We do know that one way or another, Cincinnati is in the playoffs. We don't know to what capacity, but we'll certainly be talking to you next week, either getting prepared for a wild card matchup or pretty much just checking in on injuries and kind of bridging things over, getting ready to see who the opponent may be in the divisional round. As always, we appreciate your time. You've done an outstanding job all season long. And, man, we look forward to catching up with you on Twitter tomorrow, maybe any interesting headlines going into that game. Have a nice weekend, James. Thanks for always coming on Pure NFL.
All right. Who are those two teams you named? I've never heard of them.
what a loyal guy this James Morris is.
I don't know who they are.
Nation.
LeBron James. I've never heard of them. I don't know who they are.
All right, James. Well, hey, we appreciate your time. You have a great Saturday afternoon.
You too.
All right, thanks.
All
right, everybody. So that was James Morris with the Cincinnati Bengals. Once again, doing a great job all year for us. You can make sure to follow James on Twitter at FantasyGuy23. He's also on Facebook at James Morris. If you go to the NFLExplorer.com website, just click on our Facebook page and you'll be able to find James and get on Twitter. He's at FantasyGuy23, and that's the number 23. Last but not least, let's go ahead and round out our Pure NFL segments today with our guy Craig Davis of the Buffalo Bills. Craig, Happy New Year to you. How's everything going the first couple of days of 2016?
Hey, Happy New Year. It's good for many reasons. One, the Bills season, which didn't turn out too well, is over. And, you know, it's a new beginning, an opportunity for a new beginning. So, you know, a great time for the new year to come around.
All right, Craig. So we know that the Bills are not going to make the playoffs yet again this year. Unfortunately, the season kind of unfolded. Man, how anticipated. It's very sad that that's kind of become the routine and pattern for the Bills, maybe through the first, you know, 8 to 9 games to consistently have a 6-3, 5-4 record, but be in position to basically have some games on the menu they need to win and control their own destiny and get in. And for whatever reason, it just does not happen. And so you'll be back for sure next week with us kind of doing our season-ending wrap. Maybe we'll stretch it out to 2 weeks. We're definitely going to keep you in the loop as the draft approaches and things of that nature. But let's tackle a couple hot topics since we do know this that the Bills are out of the playoffs. Most importantly, this week for Buffalo, having an opportunity with the New York Jets coming in to ruin their season. So I think for any NFL team, if you get a chance to do it, especially if it's a division foe, then that makes it a lot sweeter. So that's something that's definitely a hot topic. But I think more than anything, kind of seeing things unfold here with Rex Ryan, the defense, and particularly Mario Williams. We've seen on NFL.com that the Bills are not planning on, at least that's the initial word, to bring him back next season. Rex Ryan, we caught him earlier in the week on NFL.com saying he let his mouth get ahead of him, just speaking about how he was he feels maybe put too much pressure on his team and you know, spoke out too soon about playoff aspirations. But the headline to me was interesting with Rex Ryan saying he let his mouth get ahead of him. I think the word that was forgotten there was again. You know, this is something that, you know, kind of got ran out of New York. And, You know, he was back at it again. Rex is going to be Rex. And so talk to us, Craig. I mean, what is the state of affairs with this Buffalo Bills team? Again, going into this final game, really the only thing to play for is knocking the Jets out of the playoffs, potentially, if Pittsburgh can get a win. But outside of that, a season that I think, unfortunately, just a lot of off-the-field distractions. The Bills, I think, finally able to get some talent, get some continuity there at quarterback. And, again, we're in perfect position to win some games down the stretch. You're looking at the wild card teams, you know, 9-7 records. You know, Bills not too far off. Potentially this could have been a game for them to get in. But, again, maybe the Rex Ryan show just kind of leaked over to this team. Talk to me, Craig. What's going on in Buffalo right now?
Well, you know, Black Monday is looming for a lot of the head coaches. And, you know, the rumor mill has been buzzing, like you mentioned. And one thing that the Pullers did do, you know, this week was say, you know, Rex and Doug Whaley were safe. I mean, mind you, this is after Chip Kelly lost his job previously, so I thought it was good that the Pagulas, you know, said, okay, hey, we started this path, mind you, the new ownership. We started this path with Rex. You know, things didn't really work out the way they did, especially with the hype train that Rex brought in with all the, you know, jabber and promises and, you know, so on, et cetera. But for the most part, it was the Bills' misfortunes was a reflection of leadership and actually not being able to adjust and adapt to what you actually have. I think one thing that the Bills didn't do was they didn't do their research with Rex. I think, you know, they came in, you know, through the interview process, and, you know, Rex is a really he's a great salesman. You know, he has a lot of confidence and pride in himself. And, I mean, honestly, I mean, you listen to him, you hear him talk. I mean, he's really a motivating guy. He's a guy that, you know, you want to get after and, you know, support. And then, you know, when he sat with Kim and Terry, you know, they bought in on what Rex's dream was. And I mean, a lot of things that Rex's dream was were a lot of things that applied to the Buffalo Bills, because Rex said they were going to play great defense and they were going to come in and with the power run game. And, you know, for the Bills who didn't have an established quarterback, that's music to, you know, Doug Whaley and the owners, you know, ears. So with that, you know, the hype train comes in. Big win against Indianapolis. You follow that up with the New England loss, and, you know, here we go. You know, here's the roller coaster ride. And I think where the big failure was for the Bills was the defense, because the defense was supposed to be the backbone of this Buffalo Bills team, and they just couldn't figure it out together. Both the players not buying in, and you could get a sense of that, especially when things really started to get rough for the Bills throughout the season. And, I mean, you got key losses to the Jaguars and Kansas City throughout the season, and players didn't buy in, and Rex did not do things that allowed his guys to be successful, one being he had guys who had just got contracts, Marcel Darius, Jerry Hughes, and then, you know, a couple years previous, Mario Williams at the time, he signed the highest paid, the biggest contract for a defensive player, you know, at the time when he signed his deal. Those guys, they made that money off of their pass rushing ability, not their coverage ability. And so, you know, he has these guys dropping back in coverage, you know, trying to play passing lanes and so on, et cetera. That's not really where they made their money. And so Rex using these guys in that way really, really just became a ripple effect, you know, and just the guys didn't buy in. You got guys mouthing off, a reflection of leadership, mouthing off to the media and, you know, airing business that should have been kept in the locker room. And it should have been more of a focus on, okay, hey, here's the things that we need to do so we as a team can be successful. And that's where the Bills failed with Rex Ryan.
I totally agree. I totally agree, Craig. And certainly, like I said, when we, over the next couple weeks, you know, wrap things up with you with the Bills, I do want to talk about that a lot more, because I think that is a kind of a end result. You know, you do not, regardless of what was going on in Buffalo last year, you did not hear all this chatter coming out of the locker room. And I don't think it's any coincidence at all with Rex Ryan being there. Like you said, the team kind of taking on that identity kind of to a fault, to where, you know, a lot of players were vocal this year, and what you were hearing was their dislike, their unfavor for what was going on there in Buffalo. And so entering this last game of the season here, Craig, Shady McCoy, obviously, I believe so, is he still slated to miss this game? But, you know, Bills, you know, at this point, I guess what, taking a look at what maybe some other players, what do you think is the mindset here? Are the players going to play for Rex Ryan? I know he wants this game really bad. You know, he's got an opportunity to knock off the Jets. That would really make his year. But do the Bills players feel the same way? Or, you know, as you put it, our guys just kind of ready to hang this thing up and really get to the offseason and see how they can take a roster that still does look good on paper, you know, try to find a way to translate it over and come back and be competitive in the beginning of the year?
It's really tough to say with how things have gone this year for the Bills as far as, like, them backing Rex. Because, honestly, this Jets game, I mean, it has Rex Ryan written all over it as far as, you know, his history with the team and so on. And so I can only go off of the previous weeks. The Bills did not show up against the Washington Redskins, you know, after their loss to Philadelphia, where they pretty much laid it all on the line. And, you know, you had the McCoy stuff going on with that and how he handled things. And then the Bills just packed it in against the Redskins. Then you follow that up with a poor showing against Dallas, a beat-up Dallas team who really tried to get the Bills the game, and the Bills managed to win the game, but, I mean, they struggled throughout. And now you got this Jets game coming up, and, I mean, everything's on the line for the Jets. They win, and I believe they're in the playoffs. If they lose, you know, that keeps them out of the playoffs. So, honestly, it's a matter of heart and pride. It's not for the players. It can't be about Rex anymore. And the Bills, I mean, I really don't know what to expect out of this game. I mean, yeah, they could show up. Maybe there's some type of rally cry in the background in the midst of, you know, all the things that had preceded, you know, in weeks previous, you know, with Rex and Doug Whaley. They just really got to show up and play, but it's going to be a tough battle. The Jets are much better than a lot of people give them credit for offensively and defensively. They're a pretty solid team. They have great receivers. They have a good running game. Defensively, they're solid up front. It's going to be a really tough game for the Bills to win, especially with a lot of the things that the Bills have going on with injuries and, you know, personal things going on. And, you know, it's just – I really don't see this game going well for the Bills. This is just my personal opinion. I expect the Bills to get beat pretty bad this week. I expect the D kind of like the Redskins game. I don't see the Bills taking ownership and pride under Rex and just going out there and fighting and leading it all on the line. I'll say this, like, as a fan and, you know, so on. Like, this, in the years previous that the Bills had a losing year, you know, it was always next year, oh, man, we need this one player, we need that one player. And, you know, there's always optimism, like, oh, we're better. We last year was 8-8, this year we're 9-7. Oh, you know, we were one game better. And this year, I really feel let down. Like, I really feel like we have the players. You know, okay, maybe we got one guy out here or one guy there, but honestly, like, I really feel like across the board, like, we had the players. Even with the question, you know, about the quarterback position, which I really felt we overachieved when giving Tyrod in free agency and not really kind of knowing. Really, we didn't expect him to start initially. It was either EJ or Matt Castle. We get Tyrod. Tyrod beats everybody out. And then he comes out and he does a fantastic job this year, considering you were expecting really nothing out of him and to fill in all the best. But this year, when with everything's all said and done, the optimism isn't there. You're not really looking forward to next year, and you can only hope and pray that things get better. The Bills have done a lot of things, previous to this week on the waiver wire, getting guys that fit more of Rex's scheme, you know, on the defensive line. And I know this offseason they'll be doing a lot of things to address those things, but, man, I don't see this going good for the Bills at home. It will be a little snowy day out there, so hopefully the weather will play a factor. But I don't see the Bills being motivated. They weren't motivated the previous 2 weeks. I don't see them catching fire this week, you know, just because the Jets can make the playoffs, and they could be the reason they don't make it. I don't see it going good for the Bills this week. I expect the Bills to lose.
All right, Craig. Well, man, as always, thank you so much for joining us here. Like I said, we are going to be looking forward to doing our last couple segments with you and some off-season work this Bill season. Another one, unfortunately, going how fans have become so accustomed to seeing. But again, as you alluded to, a lot of talent on this roster. And I think they just need to find the balance and the right strings and buttons to push to make this thing connect because, man, you look at the AFC wildcard picture ending, and as always, the Bills just a game or two out of it. And, you know, it's kind of always that same old story. And so I think, you know, kind of breaking that habit is something that's going to be most highly noted. Craig, thank you so much for joining us today. You have a nice first weekend in 2016. And we'll be looking forward to talking to you real soon here to talk about the Bills and how things are going to look in the offseason and also recapping this 2015 season. We certainly had a lot of bright spots despite the Bills not making the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, thank you for having me.
All right, thanks. All right, everyone, that's going to wrap things up for today. That was Pure NFL for NFLExporter.com, and that was, once again, Craig Davis. He covers the Buffalo Bills, James Morris, the Cincinnati Bengals, Kevin Bowen, the Indianapolis Colts, and Mike Leinart live covering the Philadelphia Eagles. We'd like to thank everybody out there for joining us today. And, man, enjoy Week 17, last regular season game of the 2015 season, the first football for the NFL in 2016. And we'll be back with more Pure NFL exclusive segments next week once all of these teams' regular seasons come to an official end.